Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like...
I like long walks on the beach, big s*** and fried chicken. Hello, hello, hello.
Que show.
How is it going, Babelito?
It's going great. I am just chilling in my new apartment. I just had a wonderful breakfast. I'm by myself this week. So I had huevos con chorizo. I actually mixed the chorizo with the huevos because my boo likes them separate. Why? I have no idea. And of course, bologna. How are you?
Wait. They like their huevos and their chorizo separate.
So when I make breakfast, when Emma's here, I actually make chorizo with onions and then put it separately, and he makes tacos and he eats his huevos with his tacos with chorizo. When I make my huevos con chorizo, they're huevos con chorizo, so they're all mixed together.
Yeah.
Pues así debe
interesting.
De ser. Right.
Interesting.
¿A ti cómo te gustan tus huevos? ¿En la barbilla?
I'm vegan, so I don't know that life. I just eat fruit in the morning and some oats, some steel cut oats and water.
Ay, la otra.
I'm just kidding. You know, I like huevos con chorizo the way that my Guatemalan grandma makes them. Sorry, wrong grandma. My Mexican grandma makes them.
Yeah.
She puts the chorizo in the pan, like the, you know, that just like, oh, nasty chorizo from like whatever grocery store that's right. Just like basically fat, you know?
Yes.
She like squirts it out of the thing, like half of the case and then, or the tube or whatever. And then you cook that down so that it's like nice and brown, basically.
Uh-huh.
Nice and and almost to the point where it's almost burnt.
Casi you know quemado, what I mean? Simón.
Yeah, okay. And then she puts, I don't know, like 3 or 4 eggs in there, but lets it, just kind of like stirs it around.
Right.
And lets that cook. And then what happens is that then she scrambles it a little bit. So there's like big chunks of, they're revueltos, but barely. It's almost like the texture of an omelet
right.
With like marbled chorizo in it.
Oof.
You know what I'm saying?
That's how I make them. Yeah, I actually, yo los bato en el sartén. Like, I don't do it beforehand.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this is the thing that I don't understand.
Uh-huh.
Is like when, you know, when people scramble, it's kind of embarrassing. When people scramble eggs and they like go ham, like they, not diced ham. I'm saying they go so hard that they just like scramble it to the point where it's like the eggs are almost like, you know, like when you get to the bottom of a popcorn bag and it's just like
right. Ugh.
Just scraps like that, the little tiny scrambles of eggs. I'm like, who likes eating that? That's wild. So the less you stir the eggs, the better, you know, just like barely a light scramble is the best.
Yeah, I mean, there's a kind of huevos revueltos that I like that you actually like scramble the fuck out of them, but that takes a long time, and then le tienes que poner crema y guaraguara la cuchara, so I rarely do those because I like them a little bit runny, but when I make my huevos con chorizo, they gotta be hard. ¿Qué comiste tú hoy? ¿Tú qué tragaste?
Let me think. Well, I was babysitting and I had lunch at my cousin's house. So my cousin, shout out to Celeste, she is a surgeon, but she was a surgeon in Mexico and then she came over here, and so now she has to get like recertified, basically. Like, it's this crazy process, you know. So both her and her husband are doctors, and they have two little girls, and I am the littlest girl's godfather.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has to study a lot. So her husband did a lot of the process and is like in the process of like getting his, I don't know the terms, but like the residency here.
Right.
For him to practice here in the States. And he went through all the tests and all the exams and all that already, or most of them. So now it's like my cousin Celeste's turn to do it.
Wow.
And so she just has to study all day long. And so she took care of the kids while her husband did it, and now it's her husband taking care of the kids. And I know that it's really hard for them. So I said, well, once a week I can come over. Now I'm the godfather, so I'll come over for a couple hours and babysit. So
what do you find time to babysit? You have so much going on right now.
I know, girl, but family first. So so today I ate graham cracker goldfish. Did you know that they made goldfishes that are graham crackers?
No.
My goddaughter had a fucking fit because she didn't get the right color of gummy fish that they had. So I had gummy fish. She had an out-of-body experience. She couldn't communicate. She can't talk yet. So she was like trying to tell me what kind of gummy she wanted. And I was like, I don't know, girl, pick one. And she just was not having it. And then Pablo, my cousin's husband, came home, and he made this really great late lunch, early dinner. It was like pasta with spinach and tomatoes and a salad. It was amazing. So that's what I ate today. Awesome. But mostly I ate gummies, gummy bears. I was like, let's eat gummy bears for 2 hours, kids. They're like, okay.
That's funny.
Yeah, I love those girls, and it's just cool. I know I don't have a lot of time to do it, but it's like 2 hours. It's like my lunch break, and I go over there and I help out. So it's cool.
So what are you working on? Because you actually, last year you traveled everywhere. You had installations everywhere, and I you've been in Vegas for a while now.
I am so busy that I don't know what's happening. It's so many things, and I'm almost at the point where... this is really fucked up. I don't know if I should say it,
just
but
it.
Like, I almost got hit by a car yesterday.
Oh no.
And
don't say it.
And you know how your life flashes before your eyes when something like that bad is almost happens?
Oh my
God. Well, I was like, I have a studio at UNLV now because my next show is going to be with my friend Ramiro Gomez Jr. at the Marjorie Barrick Museum of Art at UNLV. So they gave me this huge studio space so that we could work on the show there and then just like move it to the gallery.
Oh, that's cool.
And you know, like I can't say no to shit. So like I have all these other projects going on at the same time. And now there's another project that I can't even talk about because they signed like an NDA or whatever. I'm pretty sure I'm not even allowed to say that.
Damn.
Anyway, on top of it, so like my time is like so limited. And I was like thinking about all this stuff and how I was going to schedule everything. And then on top of that, I have this podcast and another podcast. And so I almost got hit by a car.
Jesus Christ, man.
And in that split second where I like decided to, you know, what is it, fight or flight?
I
was like, wait, what if I get hit by this car? Then that means that I would have to like, I thought all of this, okay, bitch. I was like, that would mean that I would have to go to the hospital probably.
And that would take my time away from my work.
And then that would be an excuse for me not to do all this stuff. And I immediately felt a sense of relief.
Oh like, my God.
But then I snapped out of it and was like, no, I choose life. And I like ran. I just kept running across the crosswalk.
No mames.
And it was also my fault because, you know, like I wear all black and it was like raining yesterday. So my raincoat is not red. It's actually black. I'm trying to find a red raincoat. So I just like look like a shadow basically running across the street so that they didn't see me. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so
anyway,
I have to ask you this question. With all this stress and anxiety, because I've been talking a lot with some friends about how I manage my anxiety and what do I do? Like, what do you do? Because stress comes with anxiety. Like, I know, like, we used to talk a lot about self-care in the beginning of the podcast, and we haven't done it for a while. But before we get into today's episode, like, what do you do? Like, what do you do to take care of yourself?
Well, I just had to start setting boundaries. 2019, people, is the year of boundaries. Don't talk to me. Don't DM me if you don't know me. Okay, so...
Wow.
I have to set rules now. So my life is like every single day, every hour is accounted for. And I just need to like really be strict about it because then, you know, that sounds awful, but I also schedule like me time in there.
Of course.
So for me, in the mornings, that is my ultimate me time. So in the mornings, I take an entire hour to get ready. Mm-hmm. And it's not because that's how long I take to get ready. It's just like that's the only time that I have to like really like just be by myself and like focus on myself. So like I usually get up, I take a really long shower, and then like I do like my whole like skincare routine and like moisturize and all that shit, you know? And it's like, it's become a really important part because that's the only, literally the only time I have. I go to the studio or I start recording for the podcast or I go to my art studio and I'm there till basically midnight, and then I come home and I do everything all over again, you know? So
damn.
I told you about this, that I'm not doing any podcast stuff on the weekends.
Right.
So the weekends are now reserved for just making art and being with my family. I'm still working, but it's just my art. And then I also decided that that I'm only doing emails 2 hours a day.
Right.
Because that's good. I could be on the computer all day long.
Me too, yeah.
That's not enough. That is actually not enough time. And thankfully, one of my dear friends, Sarah Vick, she is now my like full-time manager, like studio manager, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So she, when those 2 hours a day are with her. So she's doing emails and I'm doing emails, and we usually do them at the same time if we can. Lately, it's been hard to schedule, so she's doing them on her own in her own place, you know, but we can do them together. When we work on emails together, we can like knock shit out. It's awesome. So just recognizing that I need help and then setting like definite boundaries, that has been awesome. And now I just have to learn how to say no, even though it's hard. It's hard to turn down money, but I just need to learn how to be like, I'm busy. Sorry.
Man, just a little bit of structure makes a huge, huge difference. And
yeah,
that's something that when you have a job like mine, where the only structure you have is office hours and going to your classes, and even though it's like, oh, you're only working a couple hours a week. No, like you're always answering emails. So my thing, for example, is after 7 p.m., that's just me. So that's when I cook. That's when, you know, like I'll smoke something. I mean, I'll smoke weed, not something. Like I watch TV. Like I have to do that. Crack. And then, crack. I have to do that because otherwise I will sit down in bed watching something and I will be on my phone answering emails. And it's so hard not to do it, especially when you have your emails synced to your phone. But yeah, like just a little bit of like 1 hour a day, you know, that will make a huge difference.
One day at a time.
Boom.
Now on Netflix. Just kidding. They don't pay us. Give us some money.
Speaking of Netflix, what are we going to talk about today, Fabi?
Okay. So y'all were angry. Some of you were really angry about the Roma episode that we did, which was, to me, it just surprises me. I guess, you know what? It doesn't surprise me. That's a lie. I just thought, y'all already know what we're about. Y'all thought, some of you were so surprised that we didn't like the movie. I'm like, we don't like anything. Haven't you heard this podcast before? So we got some responses. And if you haven't listened to the Roma episode, make sure you do that. Or listen to this and then listen to the Roma episode. A lot of people have sent the same questions over and over. So with all due respect, we're not going to, if you email us after this episode, we might not read your question if it's already been answered, or your topic. So yeah, we got a lot of letters. So we decided we're going to dedicate this episode as a response to our Roma episode from a couple weeks ago.
No, when you said that like, don't you guys know us? When Irene Mata was here, I was like, oh, I watch Moana. And she looked at me con unos ojos de lince, güey. She's like, what? Like, she was already waiting for me to say, I hated it, it's horrible. But I was like, no, I love it. And she's like, oh my God, good. Like, she's already expecting for me to hate everything. It was so funny. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so we're going to read your letters. But first, we're going to take a little break, and we'll be back. Today's episode is brought to you by the one, the only, the original Lindo Michoacan on East Desert Inn in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada.
Being so far away from those carnitas con Coca-Cola, man, it's painful. So what is the first thing that I do when I land in Vegas? It's just go directly to Lindo Michoacan, get my obligatory sopa de fideo. And sometimes my mom will have menudo that she saves, that she buys on the weekends for me when I get home. So, Lindo wow. Michoacán, the one, the only, the original. I miss you.
Yeah, and if you go to Lindo and you say that you are a Latinos Who Lunch listener, they will give you 25% off of your bill. That's right, 25% off.
Wow, so all you have to do is go, what, 4 times and get a free meal out of those 4 times? So get
your
shit
maybe
to
math, maybe math isn't your strongest suit. But if you're hungry, go to Lindo Michoacán.
Lindo Michoacán.
All right. Oh, God, how are we getting worse at doing commercials? This is like the 50th Lindo ad that we've done. Anyway, shout out to Lindo. Lindo Michoacán. Save water. Drink margaritas. Start spreading the news. We're leaving March 11th.
Wait, does this mean that we're going to be performing in New York City?
That's right. The NYU program board presents Latinos Who Lunch live at NYC in New York. Alicia Keys and Jay-Z, they sing in this. Okay, sorry. I'm so disrespectful. I know there's more songs in there. Okay, Monday, March 11th, 2019, 6 to 8 p.m. You can cash us at the Einstein Auditorium at the NYU Department of Art.
And thank you, everybody, who made this event possible. Some of the organizers include the Latinx Project and the Mexican Student Association. Again, join us for a live podcast with us, both of us together in the same room. And it's going to be Monday, March 11, from 6 to 8 p.m. in the Einstein Auditorium and the NYU Department of Art. Así o más fancy.
Yeah, shout out to Andrea and Stephanie and Thomas, our listeners that made this happen.
Awesome. Nos vemos pues allá.
See you in, let's see, what's another New York song?
Me marcho a Nueva York. Di-di-di-di-di.
Downtown. Okay, bye. And we're back.
Okay, so let's read a couple of these emails. You want me to start or you want to start?
You know what? You take charge. Why don't you start for once?
Beep, beep. Okay.
Sorry.
So this is from a listener named Omar. Hey, guys. I'm currently listening to your episode on Roma, and I've been a fan for a while now and was super excited to listen to this episode because I love Roma. So, as I started off, I was a bit caught off guard and a bit defensive of the film. I did think you all were being a bit harsh, but as I continued to listen, some points were made. LOL. You all did open my eyes about some issues. I do still think it's a win for Mexico and that Cleo, being a quiet character, was very impactful for me. I think it said a lot about how they are treated in the household. Also, you made a comment about not caring about Mexico, which maybe was a joke, but I was like, huh? But yeah, I just wanted to also thank you since you all also teaching me to be more critical of things like Roma and not just completely love it because it is about Mexico, but to look deeper into it. Also, you should do another Drag Race episode soon. Mucho amor. Good luck with everything. Omar.
Wow. Thank you for that letter, Omar. Next. So I guess what we should address is I made that comment about not caring about Mexico in this, and it is a joke because obviously I do care about Mexico. I'm half Mexican,
right?
But it was to make the point that on Latinos Who Lunch on the show we're very Mexico centric because right. of that because mm-hmm. we're from the Southwest, and the default Latino in the Southwest United States is Mexican. I always try to counter that, and I'm thinking of all my like Central South American friends who might be listening, and like I always try to be an advocate for them. So I don't know also if you haven't noticed that I like to joke around, so I say a lot of shit that I don't mean. And I've really been thinking about this. It's like, I don't want to hurt people's feelings, and I'm really sensitive, right? Like, oh, I'm a sensitive artist. What I want to like chat about, but like, That really shit, that shit does bother me. I mean, the more that it happens, I guess the less that it will bother me. But it's like, if you can't tell by my tone that I'm joking, then I can't help you, you know? Like,
estupendo.
I don't know. I don't know. But even my friends tell me that they get their feelings hurt when I'm joking around. So it's not my fault. Y'all are weak-ass bitches. Anyway, go ahead.
Pendeja. Yes, in regards to the Roma stuff, yes, it is a win for Mexico. Ah, yeah, yeah. I feel like I've had these conversations about Roma since the fucking movie came out. And I hear it. It is a win for Mexico. Mexican cinema has been erased from the, in a way, the U.S. imaginary, and it has a long, long time. There's a big presence of Mexican actors and producers and directors for a long time in Hollywood, and that's never highlighted. So this feels good. I am going to admit, it does feel good that all this attention is towards Mexico right now. Part of it has to do with the politics of the time. Part of it has to do to the fact that it's about fucking time. However, I still strongly disagree on the point of view about The Maid. The Maid, to me, even though it was centered supposedly around her, in a way it's still erased. Her voice is colonized and it's diminished to the point where we still are left wondering who she is. So I know why people are getting defensive, and I like that we're having this discussion, but I still don't agree. Like, I still think that I was left wondering a lot about Cleo, yet I know so much about Cuarón. And yes, I guess this is a movie about Cuarón's point of view, but I don't need that. I don't need that in my life. I don't need another white dude's point of view. So that's why I didn't care for it.
Yep. Okay. And so we have more emails. That's why I don't want to get into it too much, because some people wrote several paragraphs that highlight what you just said. The other thing mentioned in this email was Drag Race. Unfortunately, I'm definitely blaming Babelito for that. I have been watching Drag Race religiously since it aired 10 years ago. With the day it comes out, we can't talk about Drag Race because Babelito's not watching Drag Race.
You can tell me about
Sorry.
It.
Sorry.
You can tell
I'm
me
I'm telling
about
them
it.
Right now.
Okay, so I am getting tired of Drag Race, even though I want to see the new season with the new contestants. I feel like RuPaul did to drag what Hugh Hefner did to Playboy. It made it safe for white people, straight white people to entertain. I don't know. Like, there's a...
What? Can you explain the Playboy reference? I don't get that.
Because...
Wasn't Playboy always for white people?
Playboy made sex safe for white people. Basically, it made it safe, and it just the danger is out of it. So the edge is out of it, and that's what how I feel about drag. Drag is this amazing art form that it's about pushing boundaries, and I don't see that in the show anymore. You know, and that's what I miss about the show: to be surprised, to be shocked, to learn. I haven't learned or been shocked or surprised with the show for a while, so it doesn't mean
but
that
you're not watching it. How can you say that you're not even watching it?
Because I'm disappointed a little bit. I should watch again, and I'm going to come back, but I don't know. Me estoy aburriendo, man. Me estoy aburriendo.
Cool. So, yeah, there's so many other podcasts that do RuPaul's Drag Race recaps. Google it, loca. All right. Thank you so much, Omar. Okay, our next letter is from Connie. Todos los caminos te llevan a Roma. Hola, chicos latinos. ¿Cómo estamos? Hope everything's good. I just listened to the anticipated episode regarding the movie Roma, and it left me a bit underwhelmed. First and foremost, this bitch is ready to read us down. I can't wait. Okay. First and foremost, thank you for talking about this and putting some acknowledgement to Mexican cinema, to the Latinx, X is capitalized, okay? Latinx community. Being a film lover, it's always encouraging to see more and more people talk about the movies from my beloved country. Now let's talk Roma. You guys are correct. This movie is not about Cleo. If it was so, it would be named Cleo and not Roma. And also, it's based on the memories of Cuarón, confirmed by Livo.
his brothers and sisters, as well as other members of the family. You mentioned that the movie is about romantic nostalgia. The contrary, this film is about oppression, about the microaggressions or full-on aggressions that all the women received in this movie, and how they deal with cheating husbands, abusive boyfriends, drunk male friends, indifferent helpers, or even bratty children. And most importantly, for me, the presence of the biggest oppressor in Mexico, that is the Mexican government. If you see every time there's a scene of aggression, conflict, you can see posters and hear the voice of one of the most criminal presidents of Mexico, that is Luis Echeverria, mastermind of Tlatelolco, oppressor of music and film, and many more terrible acts. So the movie is more about the tenacity of the human spirit. Okay, RuPaul. And every woman in this movie deals with it differently. Some quietly, some frustrated, some with resignation. Okay. We're going to stop there. There's a couple more paragraphs, but just for you to respond. Do you have anything to say in response, Pablito?
Well, it's just confirming what I was just saying, that yes, this is a movie about a white director's perspective on an indigenous woman. I don't care. I just don't. And yes, he didn't hide that aspect of it, but it still feels like she just is an instrument for indulging himself on what he does best, which is gorgeous movies, right? We're not taking that away from him. We're not going to take away that away from him, because what he accomplished, for example, with Gravity, with the special effects, what he's accomplishing here with this panoramic, amazing, amazing views, nobody's going to take away from it. But ¿y mis 50 mil pesos qué? So
true, true. She basically quoted us verbatim when she said, it's called Roma because it's not about Cleo. You know what I mean? So,
right.
Yeah, we did address that. There's so many layers to this movie, and you're right about that. And, you know, talking about the government and this and that, but again, from a very specific perspective. Okay, so let's continue.
Okay.
There's two key scenes that are important. One, when Sofia tells Cleo that all women are alone. And two, when Señora Teresa takes Cleo to the hospital and she doesn't know anything about her. This two key scenes tells that the women never chose their life and that they're living fully the needs of their male counterparts, forgetting their own needs. And of course, they're not going to be aware of needs of other women surrounding them. I'm just reading what is here, okay, everybody? They are just existing. There's no romance. There's no nostalgia, just full-on oppression. The theme of domestic workers and classism comes secondary. I think if you want to compare the film to another, it wouldn't be Mrs. Doubtfire or even Made in Manhattan. People are so wild. They think we're serious. That's so crazy. That was okay. I would just say it would be Two Women, the 1960s Sophia Loren movie, an even closer understanding of the dynamics of employer and employee with the article My Family Slave by the late Alex Tison of The Atlantic.
Okay.
I thought it would be a ridiculous enough comparison to compare it to Mrs. Doubtfire that y'all would know that it is a complete an utter disrespectful joke. I was just trying to lighten up the episode.
Right.
So that shouldn't even... that's so funny to me. Okay, cool. Thank you for that. Okay, next paragraph. You mentioned two articles in the show and notes, one from Richard Brody from The New Yorker and the other from David Hudson from The Criterion. And my question is, why would you choose these two? Are these two white cis men with privilege? It's confusing to me that you criticize Cuarón for his privilege, but read pieces of two men that have made their entire career based on the taste of European standards. And clearly they don't understand the nuances or matices of cultural Mexicana. Why didn't you call out the reviews of the articles of the Mexican film critics? In Mexico, we have amazing film critics such as Eric Estrada from Chips? No, that's probably somebody else. From Dos Mujeres Un Camino? No. Rafa Sarmiento Arantz. Can you help me with that name?
Yeah, Arantxa Luna, Sergio Huidobro, and the respected Fernanda Solórzano.
As well as amazing podcasts such as Cine Premiere, Cinestética, El Placer de la Mirada, Cine Garage, Sector Cine, and more. I think it's more interesting what the voices have to say than two white guys. Okay. Well, that was real. That was a good critique.
Guess what?
I agree with them.
I mean, yes, I agree. I agree to a certain point. I didn't have time to read all those reviews, and I look at some of them. I look at Sergio's Widobro, and I also look at Fernanda Solorzano. Guess what, Mimi? They all say the same thing. They fucking love the movie. They love the movie. So, yes, I went directly to the sources that criticized it, and I looked at articles in English because I'm not familiar with criticism in Mexico. But maybe there's an article that I'm missing that is a little bit more critical of this film coming from Mexico. The same thing happens in Aardman. You have this mafia of Mexico City, white, privileged art makers, art producers, and they all are criticizing each other in a positive way. They're pushing each other, and they are exhibited all over the world, but they're not critical to each other. There's maybe one or two critics that I can think of. They're actually... you know, like doing important commentaries about the art that has been made in Mexico City at a time. So the same thing is happening in Mexico when in regards to film. So when I read those names, I went online and I tried to look. I saw some of the tweets, and they fucking love it. They all love the film. So I wasn't getting anything from these filmmakers because guess what? Whiteness is not just a disease that affects the United States. It also affects Latin America. So. Yes, they're Mexican. ¿Y mis 50 mil pesos qué?
Mm-hmm. Well, girl, you know, I got a MoneyGram account. Send them to me that way. No, just kidding. Orlandi Valuta. That's what
oh,
I use.
Oh, my God, I remember. I forgot about those
commercials. I don't trust Western Union. Okay, so listen. I think this person has really great points, yeah. Though, and it's true. We're lazy. We should have, you know, we always talk about like, hey, you know, we need to see reviews made by people of color. We need to read content. We need to see movies, you know, and then we're reading white people shit. And like, that's also a symptom of academia, Babelito. Sorry to say, but it's like, that's something that I've noticed, not just you, but many scholars, because there isn't a lot of people of color writing articles and writing books.
There's not opportunity. Yeah.
Because white supremacy, mm-hmm. right? And we can change that. And we should have been more, I agree, we should have been more responsible and looked at different voices and brought that to the table. So thank you for pointing that out, for sure.
Yeah, totally.
I think that is probably one of the most valid points this person makes. So yes, we fucked up on that part.
Completely agree.
And finally, the importance of Roma. Roma is not... all capitals, not a Hollywood production. It's a Mexican production made in Ciudad de Mexico with a Mexican crew. I know this for a fact. And most important, it's a Netflix original. The movie was already made when Netflix picked it up. The reason Cuarón went to Netflix is because Cinépolis. Because Cinépolis, the biggest distributor of Mexican films in Mexico, was not interested because it didn't have the requirements that the company wants. They didn't want a black and white film with no superstars, with Mixteco dialect, and with no musical score. Sadly, Cinépolis is not interested in featuring films but franchises. They prefer to support the Avengers, No Manches Frida. Hombre, oh, that's a movie, No Manches Frida, right? Yeah. Hombre al Agua and The Incredibles. All great films, by the way. Okay.
Just like Mrs. Sorry. Doubtfire.
She didn't write that. Just it's up there with Mrs. Doubtfire. Oh my God, have you seen the new J-Lo movie?
Oh my God, no, I haven't.
It's so bad. I went to go see it the day it came out with my friend Miguel. Shout out to Miguel. Okay. Oh anyway, shout out to Leah Remini. She's my favorite drag queen. Okay, here we go. Where are we? Okay. So right now in Mexico, there's a war in the film industry. And Cuarón and his movie Roma is helping put the pressure on Cinépolis. I can't say it. Cinépolis to support small films, Mexican films and documentaries. The average duration of a Mexican film in theaters in Mexico is 7 days. If Cinépolis sees that there's no demand, they pull it out and put a Marvel or Disney movie. That's why Roma is important and important to win awards. Hopefully with this pressure, Cinépolis can see the value of Mexican films such as Museo, Las Niñas Bien, Resurrección, and the most acclaimed movie in Mexico in 2018, that is La Camarera. Again, thank you for your good work and keep talking, even if we agree to disagree. This type of conversation will keep a light on Mexican cinema. En buena hora y felicidades, Connie.
Ooh.
Okay.
Okay, so...
I agree. Yeah. And this is something that we didn't talk about on our Roma episode. The fact that it came out on Netflix, I know a lot of people have criticized this for being like elitist and shit, but it's like, it was on Netflix and... A lot of people in Mexico have Netflix and were able to see this movie that maybe couldn't afford to go see it in the movie theater. And I remember seeing an interview with the actress, ¿cómo se llama?
Yalitza Aparicio.
Uh-huh. And she said, you know, she never heard of Cuarón before, but she heard of Netflix and she knew people that had Netflix. You know what I mean? So it's like...
That's important.
I mean, if this movie was released on YouTube, then it would really... it would have really been for the people. But that is a really great point. And I think that last paragraph where she says that, or they, I don't know, they say that this could be a shift in what Mexican theaters show, Mexican theaters show. I think that is true. That is a very good... That's a positive, you know.
And there's a long history of this in Mexican cinema. The fact is that the government is always going to export those movies that are going to make Mexico attach itself to the history of world cinema. From the 1930s, the government is supporting films that could have won awards, for example, in Cannes. So... From the 1940s on, in a way, there's two types of film. There's el cinema popular y el cinema de arte, el cinema de oro. And the reality is that the cinema de arte always goes around the world, so the rest of the world looks good. It's almost like what you... Like with the work that you're doing with José María Velasco, the reason why you chose that artist is because he was chosen as a symbol of the nation across the world. He exhibited here in Chicago, and this is in the 19th century Mexican painter. He was supported by the government because he was given this artistic positive view about Mexico. Film takes the place of art, and that's what the Mexican government does. And the reality is that though the films that are chosen to represent Mexico around the world, they artsy as fuck. They're like very French, long takes. Cuarón is not the first one. Look at Carlos Reigadas Japón. Look at Carlos Reigadas Luz Silenciosa. Luz Silenciosa is one of the most gorgeous movies I've seen in my life. It takes place in Chihuahua in Los Campos Menonitas. But those, again, yeah, the distribution was exclusively, almost exclusively for different parts of the world to show that Mexico is artsy enough, you know, that we have culture. So what's happening with Roma could be a shift. And I want to see that shift because we should all have access to Arraigada's film. As boring as an artsy you may think it is, we should be looking at those films as well. So hopefully you're right, Connie. Hopefully this shift... make something happen. Something similar happened in music, and they, for example, Radiohead was trying to release free albums because you cannot fight the system, and this is in a way to fight the system, and I hope something really changes. So we'll see.
Hallelujah.
Amen.
Amen. Next question.
Okay. So this is from Will. Hello, Latinos Who Lunch. I am a listener from New York City. First and foremost, you're both great and hysterical.
Oh my God, thank you.
I'm learning a lot from your podcast. I started listening only recently since your episode on the John Leguizamo Latin History for Morons. Oh my God, we talked about that in class. I don't want to get into it. That being said, I wanted to write to you about your Roma episode that I just finished. Now, and it should be said, I am a cis, white, male filmmaker who grew up privileged.
Next email. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm a cis white male filmmaker who grew up privileged and was able to pursue film and documentary making with the support of my family. I love Roma. I've seen it 3 times in the theater, and from your commentary, you hit the nail on the head. Cuarón's you.
I've seen Black Panther 7 times.
And I voted for Obama 3 times. Cuarón used Leavell's character as a way to appeal to the Hollywood head and make the film Oscar and award season bait. He also made this film for left, learning, and progressive people who wanted to see more diverse representation in film. As a filmmaker, as a progressive political person, this movie was really appealing to me. I am a big fan of Cuarón's and his craft. I love this critique. It challenged me and put words on my own thoughts about how the film falls short in representing indigenous people, POC, and women. But I'm still learning how to communicate those issues effectively. Again, being white, straight, male, we get it, girl. I did walk out of it with the idea that the craft was the highlight, that the story of Cleo takes a backseat to him flexing his cinematography, sound design, and storytelling. For me, those types of movies resonate with me more, which is why I probably liked it so much. And you and everybody else. Your commentary on the film about the visibility of POC and indigenous people being a double-edged sword in popular media challenged me, especially the part about giving the voice to the voiceless. On the documentaries I am working on, I do find a connection to the language of giving a voice to the voiceless. I hesitate to use this terminology because it makes me feel like I am taking advantage of the oppressed for my own creative and personal gain. Exactly. What my intentions are and have been is to signal boost the stories being told to me and my camera and helping a community after my camera is off. At the end of the day, I'm making a doc or a story about POC or people who have been oppressed by a state or corporation. I want the documentary to educate the audience in order for them to prevent injustices from happening in the future. I want to use my privilege as a vehicle to prevent injustices. Here's my question. How can I, a cis white filmmaker, continue to better help the stories of oppressed people and POC while not taking advantage of their position and their stories? Thank you, Will. What do you think?
This is an interesting question, and I have a lot of thoughts. My initial thought is, hello, cis, hetero, white filmmakers. What y'all need to do, you know what you really need to do, is be quiet, shut the fuck up, and listen. That's the first thing I want to say. But then after breathing for 10 seconds, I realized that, yes, a lot of white cis men have access that we don't have or indigenous people don't have, and they want to help tell their stories. So it's very apparent to me when I see documentaries about people of color, when there's people that are part of the project, that are maybe advising the project or helping produce the project, that are part of that community versus people that are looking at said communities as something exotic, or otherworldly, or I don't
Frida
know.
Frida-like.
Yeah, it's just like oppression porn, basically, to make you feel better about your life, you know? Right. Straight white dudes aren't our main demographic, so it's really cool that, Will, you felt that it was safe for you to write in without making fun of you. it's so hard for me, but I know your intentions are good. I too have a white friend.
Me
so
too. Yes.
Do you have
yes.
one? I have one. He's really nice. So I assume all of you are nice. So. So, I mean, that's always my biggest advice is, like, for example, okay, here we go. Here's my real answer. So a lot of times, especially within, like, the art world and my art, I am invited to be as part of, like, diversity committees, cue the eye roll, or I'm asked, like, hey, how can you help bring in community to this institution? And I usually say, well, what do the people want? Like, let's not put ourselves in a place where we are just thinking that we're helping a community. Like, what do these people actually want? And then once you actually start listening to the people and, like, living with them and seeing what they need and what they want to talk about, then I think you can make your first move. So, like, whenever I go in an art institution and they're like, hey, let's figure out programming to help the community around you,
around this institution, we say, well, what's already happening? What's already going on here? Why don't we try to support that? Why don't we try to be part of that and form a relationship with the community instead of showing them what we think they want? Because that, to me, is very elitist. Did that make sense?
No, totally. It's exactly with his comments about the voiceless. We fucking have voice, and
the thing is that nobody's listening.
Exactly.
People are voiceless when no one listens to them. So if you think a community is voiceless, maybe it's because you're talking too damn much and you need to listen to
them. Right. And that's exactly what you're saying. So you need to pay attention to that. So instead of doing a Cuaron and tell the story about your indigenous maid through your PO fucking V, like, why don't you give opportunities to indigenous filmmakers and producers? Why don't you diversify not just your camera crew people, like from the bottom up? In the last letter, they say, oh, this is not Hollywood money. This is Mexican production. Cuaron is able to do this because of white money, you know, before. And he's going to continue to do this because of the white money that is pouring into him right now because of this film. So if you have that power and you can invest, if you really want that savior, like white savior fucking documentary to be made about you when you died, like put money into production companies or like education, or there are filmmakers that are indigenous, there are filmmakers that are POC, and there are movies about these topics that talk about it in a much more nuanced way. And when I first read this letter, my first reaction was that he's like, here we go, like a white person wanted us to like be their psychologists about their white guilt. But as you say, like I'm happy that you feel comfortable listening to the podcast, and we have to give you the benefit of the doubt. And ultimately, the question is valid. Like, what should you do? And you're absolutely right. You're not going to give a voice to anybody except yourself. Otherwise, you're colonizing somebody else's voice, and you're repeating the same fucking violence that history has been repeating on our peoples for fucking centuries. So take several seats, listen, observe, and pursue this notion of pushing the peoples that need to be telling these stories, not yourself. This is why I cannot get behind Roma, because even if you want to defend it by saying this is Cuaron's perspective, I don't care about this perspective. I am not going to learn about the struggles of indigenous mates in Mexico through a fucking white dude. I am just not going to do that, you know?
We say that, but, you know, who knows? Watch this. Watch Will release a movie and we, like, go get our Starbucks and go to the movie theater and watch it. Because what? Because we're hypocrites on Latinos Who Lunch. But it's also,
this is, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned this. Because we're also part of a system that has conditioned us to not have choices, right? And like, we also want to be too fucking entertained. That is not to say that we should be supporting shit that we don't feel comfortable, but like, the industry is geared toward, not to us, and sometimes we have no choice and we just want to be fucking entertained, and we shouldn't be feeling guilty about it, you know what I mean?
Amen. So, also, I have been part of enough now, like, behind the scenes of some productions, and I realize that a lot of times people's stories aren't told because there's a budget and there's a schedule. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, for example, to make a movie about indigenous peoples and their voices, you know, you need to film people talking with their own voice. And that could take a lot of research. That takes a lot of time. Like, you know, all of these communities around the world have been treated like shit for centuries. And so if you're going to do a documentary about them, of course they're not going to trust you. So what is that? So to get a true representation of somebody, they have to be able to trust you and tell you their story. You know what I mean? And that can take years of trust to really get, you know, somebody's story and somebody's thoughts. And that's just something that filmmakers, producers, documentarians, they're not, a lot of people aren't willing to do the time and put it in there. But when people do put in the time, oh my God, you can tell. It's incredible.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean?
And those,
because usually, yeah, usually when you see movies that are about minorities or people of color or whatever you want to call them, yeah, it's like usually narrated by a powerful male voice and written by white or white adjacent writer. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
It's never, it's rare that I see documentaries that are you know, the talking heads are indigenous and POC
right.
people. And they're the ones telling the story. You
As
know?
I mentioned before, Hollywood is always a suspect. And until the face of Hollywood producers and directors and everybody that is all the way to the top changes, Hollywood is always going to be suspect. So that's just it. And the industry may not change in our fucking lifetime, you know what I mean? Because it's working for them and they're making a lot of money. So we might, yes, we're going to get more representation and we're going to get more visibility. But if the stories are being told by the same POVs, nothing is going to change. And I mean, the system is going to continue. Like, it's just, I don't know, like, it's como se dice, como que it's disappointing and it's tiring. But this is why this episode, for example, when you said it, like, let's do a whole episode of Letters of Roma. This is important because this is a conversation that hopefully will lead to a fucking change. But we'll see.
All right. Well, I think we have time for one more. And this one is actually almost like a recommendation letter from our dear friend, Jazz of Unravel from a couple weeks
nice.
Ago. Do you want to read it, Babalito?
Yes. So this okay. is from our dear friend, Jazz. Hola, amores. I just finished the Roma episode, and it had me cackling on my commute. Amid this short list of indigenous films that don't center whites, includes Maori, Native American, and Latin American Native films. So I am going to read it, and of course, as always, you can find it in the show notes in our website. So the first film that she is recommending is Ixcanul, or Ixcanul. It's an indigenous film that don't center white people. I've seen it. It's true. It is another indigenous tragedy. But it's actually a really good film. The Well Rider, The Business of Fancy Dancing, Smoke Signals, Wiñaypacha, Embrace of the Serpent, which includes white characters, but they don't get dragged.
But they do get dragged. That's what she wrote.
Madenusa, it's made in USA, but it's a Peruvian movie, so it's Madenusa and Hija de la Laguna. I've seen, oh my God, Peruvian went through this renaissance of film maybe like 10 years ago, and I'm excited about those films, and Madenusa is one of those. This is a great, great list. And again, all those links to these films are going to be on the website. Thank you, Jess, because this proves what we're talking about with the last letter. Like, there are indigenous filmmakers. There are films about indigenous people that are not centered on the same tired-ass Hollywood white savior narrative, you know?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. What a great list. Okay, so I think... Do you have any recommendations or are we good?
I think we're good. I think this is a really good list. I know for a while Netflix had all these films, but I don't know. So there's some links to some of the films. So if there's a link to the actual film that you can watch it, I will find it and put it on the website. So I think this is good enough recommendation for this week. And
yeah.
Thank you so much, everybody. Like, this is, to me, this is really important because, yeah, we can just be here bitching and complaining and attacking and making fun of. But if there's no dialogue, like, nothing's going to change, you know?
Yeah. Let me think. I'm just trying to think of anything Roma that I want to get out of the way. Shout out to Cuaron again for using a hax in his scenes. That actually made me like him a lot. Thank you also for directing, I believe, the third Harry Potter film. That was my favorite.
Yeah, that actually was really good.
Do you like Harry Potter at all, or am I just going to be talking
about
myself?
I've seen all the Harry Potters.
But you didn't read the books?
Nope.
Okay, well, some of us are fans and some of us are just spectators. Okay.
Stupida!
Listen, all these years, I thought I was a Gryffindor because I took the Harry Potter test, like, to get sorted into a house. And so, do you know about the houses?
Yeah.
Do I need to tell you?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to tell just in case people don't know the world, the satanic world of witchcraft and wizardry like I do. There's four houses. It's Gryffindor, which is like Harry Potter's house, you know, and all his good duties. And then there's Slytherin, which that's like where Snape and Malfoy, they're like the bad guys. Slytherin, and then there's, so it's Gryffindor, Slytherin, then there's Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw. And so I always thought I was a Gryffindor because, you know, I like really related to Harry Potter. You know, I thought we were the same person for a little while. But then I took the test recently on Pottermore.com, which is like J.K. Rowling's like actual like endorsed website.
Uh-huh. That's why we got that email. I was wondering. I'm like, what? Anyway, go ahead.
And I am, girl, you're off duty. You don't have to check the emails anymore. Don't look at the emails because they're mostly Harry Potter quizzes. Okay, listen.
Uh-huh.
I'm a Ravenclaw, and I made sure I was shook because I for sure thought that I was a Gryffindor all these years. Maybe a Hufflepuff, maybe because I like plants, but I was just... I took the test 3 times just to check, and I was Ravenclaw every single
time. Did that cause a little bit of an existential crisis when you got that?
No, it made sense because, you know, like, as a person, I have grown so much over the last, like, 10 years. So, like, it makes sense that I'm a Ravenclaw now because, you know, I'm a different person. Maybe back then I was a Gryffindor,
right.
And, you know, now I'm really, you know... repping for the bronze and blue, okay?
So what's the name of the website again so people can take this quiz?
Pottermore, yeah, because J.K. Rowling needs more
right.
money. Please, please go to pottermore.com. Anyway, I'm thinking about reading the books again, which is really exciting. But I don't even know, why am I talking about Harry Potter? Oh, because Cuarón, okay.
Okay.
Because Cuarón did, he directed one of the movies, and that's like when Harry Potter like took a darker turn. So I will say that after, oh my God, I just went on that whole rant for no reason. I went back and saw a lot of his older movies, and they're really great. I feel like he's a really great director, and that's really something that I didn't think I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean.
But he's amazing, and... I did watch Roma again just to be like, did I miss anything? Because all these people are really defensive of it, and I didn't. I guess the only thing, the statement that I made on the podcast before was that I never saw Cleo as a person. There was never a glimpse of her actual personality that came through, and that's not true. There is a few seconds in the movie.
Uh-huh.
After Cleo rescues the kids from the waves, the little girl from the waves, and she starts crying, and she says that, you know, she was saying, like, I didn't want her. She, like, felt guilty because her baby died at birth or was a stillborn,
right.
And she blamed herself for it because, you know, she didn't want it, and she didn't want the baby, and she didn't know what to do. And so that was, like, kind of a raw emotion that came out. That was the only time that, and I actually like that part because not even 5 minutes later within the movie, they're back at the house. Everybody's like relieved that everybody's back home. Cleo is part of the family now. I mean, she just rescued these kids' lives, right? This little girl's life. She's part of the family now. And as soon as they sit on the couch, the kid's like, quiero un licuado de plátano. And she has to like go make, she like snaps back into being a servant. That was the part that I really liked. And I think if the movie was more, not as dramatic, but like of those moments, it would have been more successful to me.
Yeah, totally. I need to watch it again. I just, me watching it again is giving the benefit of the doubt to the Cuarón, and I'm just not going to. So hopefully another problematic movie comes out next so we can talk about it and spend a couple of episodes talking about it. But anyway, that's it.
Okay. All right. Okay. As always, you could visit us at latinoswholunch.com.
lwlpod@gmail.com. You can also send us letters, asklwlpod@gmail.com, and we might read them on a future episode. Y'all, thank you so much for sending all your letters. Just so you know, we go through all of them. We read them all. We can't, again, this is the year of boundaries. We can't respond to everything, right, especially if you don't ask a question. But muchísimas gracias. Thank you for sending us your letters and your words of encouragement. They do mean a lot. Thank you to everybody that's helped with a donation to Latinos Who Lunch. As I said, I'm super busy, but I am trying to set up a Patreon for us. But in the meantime, if you want to help out, you know, to help pay for the podcast, it's a free podcast, so anybody can listen. But if you want to help, you know, we have to pay for the website every month and for hosting and all the shit. So you can donate at Latinos Who Lunch on Venmo and $Latinos Who Lunch on Cash App, or Latinos Who Lunch at gmail.com on PayPal, and pretty soon on Patreon. And if you can, please leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you listen to our podcast. 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more
visible we are. Invisibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega. The music that you're hearing is by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.